Are you coming to the tree?
Hi, and welcome to episode 41 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that is all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Pachko and Angie Han.
Hey, everybody.
Hello.
So today we are going to talk about VHS Viral. What's the one that I didn't say?
A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
Yeah, that one. And The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 1. And we're going to start with VHS Viral. And I think I'm talking about that. So VHS Viral is the third installment of the VHS series. And in case you don't know how those work, they're horror anthologies. And, this one was supposed to be four different horror short stories. But one got cut, so we only get three.
It is four, including the wraparound one.
No, but it was supposed to be four, like, segments plus the wraparound.
Okay.
But one did not make the final cut. But this one, I don't even know if I could even explain what the wraparound is. It is something
with this deranged
ice cream truck that is driving around town, and people think that they're going to go viral by getting video clips of this ice cream truck as it goes by. But it makes no sense whatsoever. And then within...
I'm so glad you said that. I felt crazy that I didn't understand
and
it.
It's...
I was like, I must not be paying close enough attention
because I don't know what's going on.
It really blows my mind, too, because this is a recurring problem with the VHS franchise. Every single
Everybody hates the reference.
And, you know, I absolutely love VHS 2. It was one of my favorite movies of last year. And that wraparound is still, like, total garbage. They make no sense. I don't understand. Why is it so hard?
No.
It makes no sense.
It just has to be a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end. Why?
Yeah. I feel like if you're not going to do it right, why do it at all? We can just watch it without that.
That's the feeling I got.
But so there's other stories in
it. Should we touch on, like, vaguely what each of them are about?
Yes.
All right, let's talk about the first one first. What was the guy's name? It's about some sort of magician guy.
Dante the Great.
Who finds a cape, and it lets him do real magic. And this
but at a terrible cost.
That is true. This one I liked a lot. I thought
Are you kidding?
Really? I thought it was a lot of fun.
I thought it was so fucking predictable.
I thought it was hilariously amateurish.
Yeah,
like the acting is so bad. The acting was flat out terrible. The production, like, I know it's, you know, it's a found footage movie, so the production values are not high, but the special effects were so bad that you could never forget that you were watching, like, a really shitty, cheap movie.
Yeah. Really? I liked when she got sucked into the chair.
I thought it looked incredibly cheesy. Like, I know that I'm not saying that we need, like, you know, $100 million CG effects, but, like, you need to make it look a little bit more believable or find some way around it.
I mean, like,
It felt like a Goosebumps episode that was just way more violent.
Did feel like a Goosebumps episode, but I think I liked that.
Overall,
I think this had more of, like, a fun, silly Goosebumps type feel than the past
ones. But takes itself so seriously, which I feel is such a problem.
That was actually, I know we're not talking about the second one yet, but that was actually one of the things I liked more about the second one, is that it is more purposely comedic. It's apparently
the
first one.
Okay. We're gonna have just the total opposite opinions on all these, because I hated the second one. But I did think that the first one was fun. I liked the idea of the cape, I liked the powers it gave him, and... Yeah, I knew exactly what was going to happen
liked
every
it
step
more
of the way.
I think I would have liked it more if he actually felt like those magicians that you see on TV, but it really just felt like someone cast their cousin. He's, like, short and chubby and kind of hairy, and you're like, this guy would never be.
Well, that's the other thing. They're like, oh, this guy's, like, an international superstar magician, but it's like, but he looks like my cousin in a cheap cape.
Yeah.
And, like, the cape that's supposed to be, like, magical looks like something he got from, like, those, like, Halloween pop-up stores.
Exactly.
For, like, $10 from the clearance rack.
It was, like...
But wouldn't that be funny if, like, someone just walked into one of those pop-up stores, picked up a cape, and it just happened to be that cape?
But that's the thing. It's just, like, what it's... Like, its attitude and its accomplishments are so different.
I think,
like,
that's... You hit it on the head. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
I don't
know.
I
had fun with it.
Well, that's fine. Let's move on to number two.
All right. So, number two is about a guy who builds... What are we even calling this?
A portal,
and it's kind of like a universe that's a mirror image of his universe.
And
but
seems
but,
exactly like it's
but also slightly different. And yeah, I didn't like this one at all.
Well, what happens is the two, so they create a parallel universe, and since the other guy in the other universe is also him, they've both created this portal. They decide we're gonna switch places for 10 minutes because our lives are pretty similar.
Detail to explain.
Because they're like, well, we're so similar, like, let's, like, switch for a few minutes and see what happens. But
and
it turns out that there are some differences that they did not see coming.
Okay, and there are some things, and I don't want to give away the surprise of this movie, but I just want to say the puppetry of this infuriated me. It's so clearly a man's hand in an ugly puppet, and it just was so stupid looking, and it made me annoyed. But
that was the thing about this segment, is that since it wasn't taking itself as seriously, and since it was, like, more, like, actually trying to be funny, it didn't bother me that the special effects looked pretty silly, because I thought that that was kind of part of the fun.
My
and
husband came in during that part, and he's like, what is happening? And I was like, I don't know.
My husband came in during that part, too, and said pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
Maybe they're parallel universe twins.
I didn't have any problem with the way the puppet looked. I just didn't like the feel or the idea at all. And it's not, I'm not even criticizing for being poorly executed.
Sure.
It was not my type of thing at all. I'm like, this is unappealing, it's not scary, I don't like watching this. And I was looking forward to the next one coming up.
I thought that toward the end it kind of goes off the rails and it doesn't live up to the promise of the beginning. But especially in the beginning, it's kind of funny. And unlike a lot of the other ones, like you kind of start out and you're just like, where is this going? Because it just kind of seems like funny and quirky.
Yeah.
I think ultimately I wish that the twists had been smarter, because it kind of starts out feeling like a better movie than it ends up being.
And you said there were three, but there's sort of four, so I want to kind of go quickly because we're running
out of
time.
Alright, so number three is about a group of boys who are skateboarders, and like they have one kid who's making videos of them. And they go to, where do they travel
Tijuana.
To?
Tijuana.
They travel to Tijuana and
decide to skate park on what is clearly a Satan worshiping area.
Yeah, they skate in this area and it's kind of like there's drawings all over the ground. And sure enough, like, you've seen it in the trailer, the guy with like the skull mask, and they just keep coming at them and these kids have to fight them. Alright, it was incredibly repetitive, but this is an instance where I liked the look, I liked the tone,
it felt like a music video beat to me.
I felt like it made no sense that this was shot in found footage. I get that their whole concept is they're making skateboard movies.
Well, that's
the action sequences are nonsensical.
That's a problem with this entire movie.
Yeah.
This is one of the poorest uses of found footage in every single one of them. The large majority of the time, there is either no reason for something to be shot, or you have no clue who the fuck is holding that
camera.
Camera,
yeah.
There were so many scenes where I was distracted, like, throughout all the segments, where, like, you'd be, like, you know, you'd see, like, two people talking, someone's shooting them, but it's still supposed to be found this footage, so I'm like, am I supposed to believe that the guy's, like, hey,
yeah. So, like, how's it
None
going?
None of that made any sense.
Exactly.
So, like, that was a pet peeve I have, but I can let that kind of shit go, because this is not trying to be a smart horror movie. But, like, I didn't even find it scary, and again...
It wasn't scary.
Oh,
yeah.
It wasn't scary. And, like, the first one, it felt so misogynistic. Because women in this movie are either, ruining dudes' good times...
Yeah.
Or have monster vaginas. Again.
And there are...
Again with the monster vaginas.
There are,
I
like
the monster vaginas
boob
in the first
shots.
One.
There are, like, eight boob shots. Like, there are eight shots.
Oh,
like,
also
just, like,
one of an
like,
old
tits,
woman. Because,
like,
guys, women's boobs when they get older gross. That's the message. Like,
that's the
woman,
only boobs that we actually see, like, without the bra. The other ones are just, like, heaving bosoms and, like,
oh, and
bras.
Then it's creepy because there's that section where you're staring at this girl in her underwear and then they basically tell you that she's a victim of revenge porn. So then you're supposed to, I guess, feel bad about looking at her, but it's like, but you made us look at her and then gave this, like, it just, it's trying to be like, no, we know what we're doing. It's like, no, you're trying to have your cake and eat it too, but it's still a movie that feels like it's made by frat dudes.
Yes.
No, it definitely feels
the whole,
that
I
way.
Felt like, I mean, it would be one thing if it was just like, oh, like, this segment had a little bit of that and whatever, but it kind of felt like one of the themes throughout was that it felt really misogynistic.
Dude, women's bodies are hot, but also gross. Like, that was like a running theme.
It's, I mean, overall, I think the production value is just so far below VHS2.
Yeah.
But even though
it
I found
care.
Some of these to be, like, you know, like, decent enough watches, the fact that it's such a big step back, because, like, I got all hyped up about VHS2, because I'm like, holy shit, if they keep doing this, and they keep doing it this way, this can compete with, like, regular feature narratives. Like, this has a shot at breaking into the mainstream just a little, but, like,
not with what
they did here, no.
So how would you rank them?
I would probably say my favorite is VHS2. I actually
enjoy
them.
Of the segments in this one.
I'm gonna rank them based on which one I like to watch. I'm not saying I want to watch anyone again, but if I had to watch another one right now, I'd actually probably pick the skateboarding one, then I would do the magician one, and then I would do the parallel universe one.
Wow. And nobody ever needs to watch the wraparound narrative that makes
That's...
I would put the magician one up top, but again, I didn't like it that much. I just didn't hate it. Like, the parallel universe one I just thought was, like, an interesting concept, but sloppy, and I didn't get why they were doing the things they were doing in the places they went. And then the fucking skateboard one, like, that made me feel old. That made me feel like I don't understand kids today.
Well, a lot of it is, like, teenagers kind of, like, sitting around shooting the breeze, and I'm like, this is so boring. That's what I didn't like about the skateboarding one, was that I found it incredibly boring. And the way that, and it's so repetitive that it felt to me like I was watching someone else play a first-person shooter.
Yeah.
Watching someone else play
it
is
fun. Oh, it does feel like that at one point, Snake Lake.
It does feel like that, but I kind of like looking at it for that reason.
I like the Parallel Universe one, and then I like the Magician one, and then I like the skateboarding one, and once again, nobody needs to watch the wraparound narrative.
Yeah, so it sounds like none of us would recommend this movie.
No, no, there's a lot more, especially on VOD right now. Yeah. Actually, if you want a horror movie and you want to watch it on VOD, this second, go on and watch Housebound, because that is a fantastic movie. Have either of you seen that?
No.
Oh my god.
Well, maybe we'll talk about it in a future episode, because right now we should move on to
you would like that. Let's table that discussion.
We'll table.
But I'm betting.
But we're going to move on to A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, which sounds kind of like a Mad Libs for independent film. It is the first ever feminist Western, or feminist Iranian Western vampire movie. It's in black and white. Its main character doesn't have a name, and it's amazing. Angie and I went to see it kind of being like, oh, okay, I don't know. But it's actually really cool. It's about this town called Bad City, and it's this, like, ghost town where everybody living there is kind of on the fringe, and there's one guy who looks a lot like James Dean, except Persian, in that he is, like, hot, and he wears the shirts. So
he's got, like, this, like, rockabilly style thing going. He's always wearing, like, the rolled-up t-shirts and, like, the blue jeans.
And, like, he's trying to not be a shitty human being in this town, but it's kind of hard not to be and whatever. But he crossed paths with the girl who, what I love about the title is, and I wrote about this in my review for CinemaBlend, when you hear the phrase, a girl walks home alone at night, I feel like your instant thought is something terrible will happen to her.
Yes.
And what's so cool is from the very first frames of setting up the girl, who wears like a head-to-toe headscarf, is that you don't get that feeling that she's at risk. You get the feeling that she is the risk. And it's this really great reversal where she is a vampire, and the way they tell this story about the two of them, and it's sort of a romance, and it's sort of, it goes into all these places, and its influences are just strange.
Can you put it in a genre for me?
I really have a hard time doing that, because it's like, they're calling it a vampire western, which makes sense.
That's right. I think that vampire western is probably about the most accurate thing I can think of, but it's actually even weirder than that. It's very much its own thing, and I know that sounds like a complete cop-out, but it
because
really did feel like, it doesn't feel like anything else.
It's pulling influences from a lot of places, like,
as you can tell by how many things Christy rattled off when she was describing
it. Right, like, there's, some of my favorite scenes are when the girl goes to her apartment, and she just dances, and it's like, her in just like a white and black long sleeve t-shirt dancing, and it's so intoxicating and interesting to watch, and it made me, like, it reminded me of, like, you know, Iranian New Wave or French New Wave, but, like, you don't need to have a concept of what those are to enjoy this film. It's just kind of fascinating and weird and funny, and, like, parts of it are scary. Oh, and there's that pimp that has tattoos that Angie and I are obsessed with.
Oh, okay, so there's a guy in there who, he's a pimp, because this is a western, so
and a drug dealer.
Jobs like that.
Yeah.
And he just has, it becomes like kind of a silent running joke that he has the worst tattoos.
They just keep revealing them and they get worse.
Like, he has like the word like sex, like clumsily tattooed across like
in English.
His neck. Like the whole movie is in another language.
Or like he has like, I forget what some of the other ones
There's one point where we're in his apartment and he has like tiger print everything and you're just like, you were a gaudy douchebag. And then he pulls his shirt off and he has a tiger tattoo on his stomach and I could not stop laughing. Mm. It's a movie, it's like one of those movies, it's actually really funny in like those like kind of weird secretive ways, like, or not secretive, but, you know, subtle ways, that's what I meant.
It's like, it's one of those movies that critics are talking about a lot right now, and it can seem kind of strange, because you're like, I don't know, I feel like it sounds like a critic movie, you're like, well, of course, critics like weird super shit, whatever.
It kind of is a critic movie.
And I can see that, but I also feel like this is a movie that like 14-year-old me would have went nuts over. Because it is referencing all these things, but it does feel like distinctly its own thing, and it's such an interesting take on what the horror genre is. And like parts of it are scary, but it's more using vampires as this kind of like attempt to flip the tables, you know?
Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of the other unusual vampire movie that we've talked about this year, Only Lovers Left Alive.
Another one that I had not seen.
Because it kind of has the same, like, you know, you're like, oh, it's going to be a vampire movie, and you expect, like, A, B, and C, and then they just kind of go a different way with it, and so much of it is, it's kind of, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night is kind of, like, slow, and a lot of it is just kind of, like, mood and tone and style.
Yeah, and it's, it's funny because it's just little things like watching her skateboard down an empty street in a head to toe
skirt. While it's like fluttering behind her like a superhero cape. It's like, there are so many images that I was like, I want to just like capture it
and I
just
was
like
anxious.
Put it in my pocket.
I was anxious because it was black and white because I was saying to a friend of ours who also was the PR rep for this movie that I was like, I just get uncomfortable when it's black and white a lot of times. I feel like it's like being like, look, we're black and white. But this movie, it actually made sense to me that it was black and white. It kind of created that zone. And the thing I really liked is that I described in my review that she has blood red lips, and it's like, it's black and white, how do you know that? But then there's a point where she does have blood on her lips, and you're like, oh, then that lipstick she put on was that color. It's this kind of fun, it's just really, it's so hard to explain. It feels like, it felt like the Twilight Zone or something, but like, less punchy.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like a dream.
I can't figure out if I'm gonna like this or
yes.
that.
I don't know if you will, but I really want you to see
it. I feel like it's a toss-up for me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, like, you were saying that it's, you know, you were saying that it sounds like a critic movie, and I think it kind of does. Like, it's not a movie that I think, honestly, I really liked it, but I don't think it has big mainstream appeal.
No.
But I feel like if the stuff that we're saying sounds intriguing
yeah.
to you, if you're like, oh, that sounds like something
I feel like if you like David Lynch, if you've sought out Nosferatu, if you like Jim Jarmusch movies, then you'll like this.
Mm.
It's definitely a niche movie, but it just feels so special for that. Like, I really loved all the weird choices. I'm forgetting her name. I want to say, like, Anna Lily Napour. Is that right?
The last name I think you read, I don't know. I don't remember what her
name. Sorry, guys. It's been a long day. But yeah, she's done an outstanding job, and you're going to see interviews with her all over the place because, yeah, a lot of critics are crazy about this movie. And it was funny because we saw it in one of the first critics' reviews in New York. And, like, people are kind of being like, I don't know, people are saying a lot about this. And everybody was kind of, like, ready to have had an opinion. Like, everybody was, like, pumped. And we all kind of came out there being like, well, that was something really fun and special. So that was pretty exciting.
Yeah, like, everything about it, just, like, the world that she sets up, it doesn't feel like what I think Iran would probably feel like. I've never been there. It doesn't feel like America, despite being a Western, it doesn't really feel like anything, and it's got this, like, weird timeless quality. And one of the things we're talking about afterwards was we're trying to figure out what year this is supposed to take place in, and you really can't tell. It's just a movie that kind of, it's its own thing. It's, like, created its own world.
I'm trying to find the name of the actress who plays Sheila Vand. Sheila Vand plays the girl, and I want to see her in everything.
She's one of those actresses that even when she's not talking, just like with a look, she can tell you, she commands a screen and she tells you everything that you need to know about her just
like
with a look.
It's funny because there's these big moments in the scene where she does like kill people or she attacks somebody, but then there's like a little moment where he gets her earrings and she doesn't have pierced ears and she's like, pierce them, and he pierces her ears, and it's such an intimate, strange
little
moment.
Well, he's penetrating her.
It's true. It's true, but it's in this very, it was actually really beautiful, and it's like outside of like a power plant, so it's like it shouldn't be a romantic venue, but it just feels so subtle, like delicate, and I loved it.
There is a cat in it.
There is?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, and I feel like we should...
And nothing bad happens
to
the cat, right?
I remember us having this conversation that we could tell Perry successfully there is a cat and nothing bad happens to the cat.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And it's a gigantic cat.
Really?
Yeah, apparently this cat is the only one eating while in Bad City. That's true. But I think we could move on to our final
this
film.
This is actually a great transition, too.
Yeah.
Because there is another really big cat.
It's true.
That
eats
really well.
Like
a really
cat,
poor
okay.
setting.
Despite everything. But yeah, I think Angie and I would say, if this sounds interesting to you, absolutely sick out.
So yes, let's segue into our last movie, which is quite different. It's called The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 1. It does have a cat in it, a huge fucking cat. Everyone else in Panem is fucking starving. This cat is gigantic. But anyway, so if you remember the last film, Catching Fire, left off with Katniss and a few other of the tributes being rescued from the Hunger Games arena and discovering that there was all along this, you know, plot that people were working with District 13 to, like, overthrow the Capitol and all that stuff. This one picks up where that left off with Katniss now in District 13, which is run by President Elle McCoyne, played by Julianne Moore. Right?
Yeah.
You gave me a look and I was like, oh, did I get it wrong?
No, you're getting it.
Okay.
You always get the most convoluted plots.
I do. And a lot of the movie is taken up with, so Katniss is here, PETA has been captured by the Capitol and has been taken prisoner, so him and Joanna are over in the Capitol. Katniss is obviously very upset about this, and she's hanging out in District 13 with Gale and Finnick and her mom and her sister and Beatty and a bunch of other people. And the main thing in this movie is that the people of District 13 have are trying to you know, get the message out. So they're organizing all these rebellions, and one of the things that they are working on is having Katniss kind of be the face of the rebellion. You know, she's the Mockingjay, and they're shooting all these videos with her, you know, propaganda videos. It's the first half of the story, you know, Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 1. So I think that's kind of why it feels a little bit incomplete by design. I thought that this was actually really good, and I remember when I first heard that they had split it into two movies, I was just like, oh, okay, here we go.
I actually thought that
it justified the running time well enough that I was not mad about it.
Okay, so when they first announced it, I'm like, good idea, because that book has so much in it, and it feels so rushed. Maybe I'll have time to flesh it all out and make all of these little things that happen feel
especially
a little more justified.
In the book,
but
Katniss keeps getting knocked out, and then she wakes up, and people go, hey, while you were out, all this stuff happened.
I have a question for you guys, though.
Yeah.
So, this is part one of part two. Do you think we need to assess it as its own movie, or is it fair to assess it as a part one of a two-part experience, you know?
Because
like a lot of people I'm hearing are complaining that it doesn't feel like a complete story, and they're like, well, it feels like a part one. How is that okay? But like, personally, I'm fine with
it. I think
it.
What it is like, as I was recounting the plot just now, I'm realizing that it feels incomplete because it is, but when I was in the theater and when I walked out of theater, I didn't walk out feeling unsatisfied. I didn't walk out feeling like, they gave me half a movie.
I feel like because it says part one, people are like thinking of that, but I genuinely feel like if they had just not left part one and if they had given the fourth one some other title being like, Mockingjay Begins Again or whatever, some stuff, shit like that, I feel like people wouldn't be as caught up on that because, you know, Hunger Games was not, like, Hunger Games told a part of a story. And then at the end of it, like, she was alive, but we knew the President Snow was still furious with her. Catching Fire, she gets out, but, like, PETA's left behind.
I don't think it really tells a complete story. I think it's fine. I think that there's enough kind of closure and, like, enough, they pay off enough things.
I think the quest of this one is about rescuing PETA.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess so.
No, I think they picked the perfect place to end.
Yeah. They did pick
and also
pick
because
the right place
what's
end.
To
yeah.
come from here is going to feel, it's going to feel part of the same story, but it's going to feel very different. Like, knowing what's to come, they're going to have one heck
exactly.
of an explosive
ending.
Exactly,
it's a huge turn to where to go from here. And I like the way they did it because one thing that the movie did, thankfully, is that a lot of stuff that she's just told in the book were shown, including some scenes of District Rebellion that were just mind-blowing to
This is a perfect example of someone changing source material to fit the new
medium.
There was that scene in District 7 where they climb up the trees. That was incredible. And being able to see the dam explode before into the Capitol, it's like, that almost made their mission make more sense. Because I saw what it took to make that happen, and now I believed it. And then I don't think that the intercutting between Finnick's speech and the rescue mission played particularly well. I think it was just like a sloppy editing thing more than anything. But to be able to see what it took when they went in there, that, because like in the book, she just like, she like falls asleep, wakes up, and Haymitch is just like,
hey,
back, BT
Dubs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I like that a lot. And I'm not going to say what the final scene is, but I feel like the final sequence of this was done spectacularly.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember because Christine and I went to see it together, and in the theater, there was just like a stunned silence at one point where everyone's like, what's gonna happen? And then like you could kind of feel the entire like theater like kind of like breathe a sigh of relief when like the movie then like
because the movie
continued on.
I feel like we could say there's a point where the movie acts like it's over.
And everyone was just like, what?
Yeah, like, you could just feel like...
Oh, I know exactly.
And then the movie, like... And they actually, they completely fake you.
Oh,
they
yeah.
fuck with you on purpose. They're trolling you. Because the screen goes black for just long enough.
It's
like,
5 seconds.
Like,
I saw it again and I counted.
And then the whole entire theater kind of, like, collectively was like, oh, okay, thank God.
And it's really... meanwhile, it wasn't even... It continues on, but what they end on isn't much of a sigh of a relief either.
No, it's a completion to the point.
Exactly.
It really made sense to me. I wrote for Cinema Blend that I really genuinely feel like they broke this into two films at just the spot they should have.
Yeah,
I think it's really
well executed.
That was actually where I was guessing that they were going to split it, because it's, I think it's the most
It was funny because my husband was like, I saw it the first time without him, and I came home and he's like, I think I know where they split the movie.
Was he right?
He was dead on.
No, of course.
That's probably the most It's the part of the book that makes the most sense. I want to talk about one other big change that they made from the book that I
and then get where you're going.
Effie.
Oh my god!
So in the books, she's not in the third book, is it at all?
She's at
the very, very end.
They presume that she is.
They assume she's dead, but then you find out that she's been a prisoner. But like, yeah, she's not active.
But in the movie, it turns out that she has been taken. Like, you know, she's a political refugee in District 13. And
she's not into it. She's not happy about
it. She's not into it because she's like, I've been resigned to a life of jumpsuits, and I'm not doing great justice to the way she says it.
I miss my wigs.
And what she does with her outfits, too.
I love it.
I don't think I realized this way because we've grown attached to Effie over the other two films, and they never really did much with Katniss's prep team. So it's like that void still needed to be filled in this movie, and to do that with the prep team would have been pointless.
Yeah, I don't
think to do it with Effie.
In the books,
is very
Katniss
successful.
Finds her prep team for Senna, and she reconnects with them.
But I didn't realize how much I missed and needed Effie until she showed up,
You need that, like, breath of fresh air almost,
it's a very
comedic relief.
That's so funny. That is legit how I described it. I wrote a piece for Summer Blood about how Effie is the MVP of this movie, because the movie is brilliant, and again, Jennifer Lawrence kills it. She's so good in this, but it's such a bleak movie where so much is going on that it's just upsetting, and then they literally, and it's funny because the second time I went to see it, knowing what was going to be behind the door, whenever they introduce her, I listen for it, and I could actually hear people, like, inhale and be like, oh, like, Effie! And, like, I love District 13 Effie, where she's just, like, she can't have her makeup, she doesn't have her wigs, and she's trying so hard to, like, hold on to who she is, which is a fashionista, even when she's in, like, a shitty situation.
One thing I liked about it is she is the comic relief, but she's not just the comic relief.
No,
like, I think you actually get
to know her.
Yeah, you actually get to know her very well, and one thing that you just said about how she's very true to herself to being a fashionista, and she is able to kind of, like, use that to contribute in her own way.
Yeah,
I
also
thought
that brings
was
the whole picture together.
Yes.
And like, that actually touches on the District 7 and District 5 stuff, too, because it's, like, it's one thing to have a war movie told from Katniss's perspective, which is what we get in the book, but in the movie, like, it completely changes the game to see how all of that affects the rest of the country.
It's a lot less insular.
And, like, Effie's also part of that, because it's, like, you know, it's the capital
and
see how she changes and adapts, so it really helps you get a better sense of what's really going on there.
And, like, I feel like this all has to do with how Elizabeth Banks has been playing Effie, that, like, we as fans didn't want to lose her.
I think that she gives the character more depth than she had in the book.
Absolutely.
The script
absolutely.
Helps too, but I just feel like so much of it is like Elizabeth Banks and the way that even when she says like the most like silliest thing, she kind of imbues it with so much personality.
I also
and, like,
super love her and Haymitch flirting ever so briefly in this. Like, I didn't expect to want that, and then I was really into it. But yeah, that's funny. And my favorite thing that she says is she looks, and I think it's in one of the trailers, she looks at Katniss and says, "Everyone's either going to want to kill you, kiss you, or be you." And it's like so, I love it.
It plays even better in the movie than it does in the trailer.
Yeah,
You know what the one thing in this movie that I really disliked?
What?
Can you guess what it is? No.
Is it that she's mean to the cat?
I was
prepared
for that.
You would think someone named Katniss.
I mean,
Kat is right there.
I think that they could have completely taken Gale out of this movie.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, no, you're right. In the books, I remember being more conflicted about, am I Team Peeta or Team Gale? In the movies, I'm just like, Team Peeta, Team Peeta, Team Peeta.
Yeah. That's how I never really got that while I was reading the book.
But when I was reading the book, like, I think
it was a thing. It was a thing that people kept talking about, but I think because Twilight was also a thing at the time. So then people were like, are you Team Peeta or Team Gale? And I read the book and I was like, how is that even?
But like in the book I never was, you know, weighing the options between the two of them. It was always Peeta. But at the same time, in the book, I still got the sense that like Gale was her rock and that was her piece of home.
You kind of you get a better idea of like why
she's like just like this shadow following her.
I also think
like,
that's I don't get Liam Hemsworth. I don't understand.
He's like stone face. And like, when he was in District 12 at the end telling that story of how he rescued people, there was nothing to that at all.
I don't think the casting makes sense because he looks so different from Peeta. But like,
I don't want to blame him, but like then you see what Josh Hutcherson can do with just like looking at a camera and reading these things. I mean, there's such a bigger like physical performance.
I'm like getting upset remembering Peeta's scenes.
What?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Peeta's scenes.
That, that transformation, holy.
Yeah.
The fact that they can do that to a person is incredible.
I also love that it has to be CGI, right?
I don't know how they did it, but like they needed an award for what they did to him.
I just remember one really fun detail. Well, not fun, but one detail is like when every time you see PETA, you notice that his clothes are getting more and more like constricting, mm-hmm. and it's like a weird, like it's like the kind of detail that I picked up because I was watching closely. Also, but you look at it and you're just like, wow, yeah, well done, movie. Like,
seriously,
that's like such a little thing that does that.
There are a lot
so
of
effective.
Really, like, fun little details, too. You know what else I really liked? I liked being able to see Coin in, like, that little command center where they were being bombed. Because, you know, in the book,
we don't get to see that.
You don't get to see that, but you also don't ever really get to see her lead. Like,
that's true.
I like that we got to see a scene, and that scene made me believe, you know, that is why you're the president of District 13.
I think the movie is actually better than the book.
I agree with that.
And I think we need to wrap up, but I do want to say also, Philip Seymour Hoffman's really wonderful in this.
You know, I was almost taken out of the movie because every time he kills it in a scene, I'm just like, oh. Like, no.
It's and they do dedicate the movie to him.
He's like remarkable in this, though.
He creates a really
complex
character.
I don't think he's
capable
of ever not being remarkable in things.
It was really wonderful. I highly recommend. I feel like you have to see this movie.
I think the only thing that might take away from this, or at least that took away from it a little bit for me, which is why I would probably rank Hunger Games and Catching Fire as like more enjoyable movies for me, is that I appreciated the structure of the games. It's like, when I came out of those movies and went back in for a second viewing, as I was watching it, I'm like, okay, we're up to this part, yay. And then all of a sudden it's the reaping. Then it's the chariot thing. Then you're going to go into the arena. Like, you don't have that here. It's kind of just like, I mean, it has structure, it's got a proper pace, and it flows well.
I think that the adaptions did, the writers, screenwriters did a really great job of creating a pace that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't feel meandering. Like, I think the third book feels meandering.
Yes.
The movie doesn't to me, but
it's
just
not the same structure, so, like, I longed for that a little bit, but it doesn't make this, you know, any less of a great movie.
This has been my favorite Hunger Games movie so far. I've seen it twice. I really like it. I think the performances are outstanding. I think the comments it's making about politics is really interesting.
It's really smart. I kind of like, well, after this is the fourth fucking dystopian teen YA adaptation we've seen this year, and I tweeted about this. I was like, I just felt like Hunger Games, like, you know, kind of let the other ones go by, and then walked in and was like, this is how it's done. Drop
it's
my mic, get the fuck out of here.
It makes me so happy that I've spent so many years of my life covering this, and then like these movies are coming out and it's deserving all the hype, all the attention, all the money.
Yeah.
Like, good for them. Thank you for making
worthwhile. Lionsgate, you killed it on the marketing.
Seriously.
Jesus. And one of the things is, like, I remember when I was watching the movie, like, I didn't even realize how much of the marketing had soaked in, but, like, you would hear, like, a song, like, the District TV song, and I would immediately just, like, tense up just, like, from
it's
having
incredible.
Seen the teasers, and I was just like, holy shit, Lionsgate, like, you actually made the marketing part of the movie, which you never see.
And I also just want to say that the song that Katniss sings in this, I cannot get out of my head.
I keep walking around, like,
it's
whistling
and humming. It's not on the soundtrack, but it is going to be on the score, so I probably will have to buy
the
score. So, in sum...
Definitely.
The thumbs up.
Hunger Games all around.
Yeah.
All right. So that is a wrap on this episode. You can find us all over the place. We have our own website, popcornprosecco.com. We are on Twitter at popcornprosecco. We are on iTunes, and that is where we would like you to go and leave comments and like us and rate us and all that good stuff. Watch us on YouTube, put some comments there. Maybe we'll talk about like the topics you bring up on next week's show. And we are also on Twitter ourselves as well, and all over the internet too. Christy, you want to take it first?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Christy Puchko. That's at KRISTYPUCHKO. Really long day, guys. Almost forgot how to spell my name. And you can find my career highlights on decadentcriminals.com because I write all over the interwebs. You can find me at AJHAN on Twitter, and I write for slashfilm.com.
And I'm at PNemiroff on Twitter, and I write for collider.com. So thank you guys so much for watching, and we'll see you next week. I feel like we should, like...
Oh! No, they go like this. Yeah.
And then we're out of frame.
Oh. Yep. There you go.